now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Go put your coat on, honey. This is getting good.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. Yesterday, my current guest, Larry Merchant, told me he was being interviewed by somebody who was looking into the history of HBO. You know, you and I haven't talked about HBO. I mean, the fact that when HBO sort of retired and went off the air as far as boxing was concerned, that was a bit sad. But outside of that, we haven't talked really extensively about your time at HBO. What were the highlights and the lowlights? If you go through it, like from 78 on, right? From 78 is when you started, correct?
Yes. Okay. You know, to me, there were just highlights and bigger highlights. Whether it turned out well or not, if you're out there analyzing and telling stories and critiquing, there are some nights when you miss the story. Mm-hmm. You miss the central story of the fight. That happens, and that's why, just like you have three officials, and you hope that at least two of them get a result right, you have three announcers, or at least we did, and you hope that two of them got it right, and most usually we did. But there were higher highlights. We covered so many great fights from Sugar Ray Leonard and Hearns and Hagler in the 80s, and then the heavyweights in the late 80s and early 90s. I always think of the my timeline regarding Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. And our experiences together and his leaving HBO because he didn't particularly want me to announce his fights. But, you know, I don't think of it in those terms. You know, what I think of is one of the questions I'm often asked is what my best interviews were. Mm-hmm. And most people are thinking of the incident with Floyd Mayweather, but to me,
not me,
the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson fight, which was of course this enormous upset, was some kind of serious moment for me as a broadcaster. I had originally come from print journalism. Mm-hmm. Because Buster Douglas, after that fight, was so tied up emotionally, having won the heavyweight championship of the world, having maybe resolved some issues with his father, who was a tough middleweight in his time, not a championship caliber fighter, but a tough guy. And Buster was raised in his gym, and Buster wasn't exactly a tough guy, and he tried other sports until he came back to boxing. And then the fact that his mother had died a few weeks before. So all these entanglements, emotional history came to play, and when I went to interview Buster Douglas, he couldn't talk. He was so wound up emotionally. And I heard a voice in my head saying, "This is show and tell, Larry. Just let's show this. We do these interviews in part to show who these fighters are as human beings. We do these interviews to answer some questions and question some answers." And he couldn't talk, and he stepped back, and his handlers took him, and they were whispering to him, "Let's go back to the dressing room, let's go." And but he wanted to tell his story, and it took him maybe 20 or 30 seconds, which is a lifetime in television seconds, to gather himself to tell the story he wanted to tell about the fight and what it all meant to him. To me, that was my suddenly becoming a professional at this craft, because I understood that the camera focusing on this guy who had just pulled off the upset of the century, or so we thought at the time, and all of his emotional cords being rung, that was real television. It didn't need a question. But then he stepped forward and we talked about all of these things, and to me that was a primal moment. And there were other lessons that I learned from what I did across the years.
You know, when I think of Buster Douglas, I think of Haseem Rahman and most recently Andy Ruiz, guys that pulled off this huge upset and then just couldn't handle it emotionally.
Well, they couldn't handle it afterwards. Certainly Buster Douglas couldn't. He put on
100 pounds.
15 pounds or so. For his fight with Holyfield,
And
didn't seem to care very much. And he didn't. He didn't love boxing. In that moment, because of his mom's death, because of his differences with his father, and because he was fighting for the heavyweight championship, it was a way of redeeming his whole life. And those are the stories we try to tell. But, yeah, you know, fighters are human beings, and some of them handle things differently than others. I have to remind myself that the guy I'm trying to interview was just getting punched for an hour. So, and just learning to do my homework before the events so that I will have enough of information in my head to feel that I could say certain things.
I think it was 1982, and Harold used to tell me this, the late Harold Letterman, your broadcast partner, of course, the HBO boxing judge, that voice, Harold's voice. Well, Jim, bottom line is, Harold told me the best fight that he ever called, he thought, with you guys, was the Gomez-Pintor fight, Wilfredo Gomez and Lupe Pintor, back in 1982. Of course, Pintor ascending from 118 pounds to 122 pounds. He had beaten the former bantamweight great Carlos Zarate at 118, moved up to 122, and Gomez just, they went back and forth. Gomez finally won, but what a battle of wills.
Yeah, and that was the next fight we did after the fight in Miami. I'm trying to think of the names of the fighters. They fought at least one rematch. The great fighter from Nicaragua.
Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor.
Right. I mean, how good was that? So we were in a run in those days of having a lot of big fights, which sometimes means an outstanding fighter is in a mismatch because there just aren't enough guys around to compete with him, or two really good fighters just throwing down.
Yeah, you know, we brought up Alexis Arguello there. Of course, death in 2009, 2008, still questionable whether he shot himself or somebody killed him. He was so emotionally depressed that he came on his show and talked about death and things like that. And I tried to go down to Nicaragua and straighten him out, and he finally went into rehab, this and that. But both he and Pryor were smoking crack together in Miami. When he told me that story, I almost wanted to cry. He was telling me the story in Managua, Nicaragua, sitting in his backyard. And he goes, yeah, Aaron and I were smoking crack together in Miami. And I say to myself, what could send a man in that direction? You know, I was just blown away by that. And Alexis was never the same, ever. He was an emotionally tender man. And I think that first fight with Pryor just broke him for the rest of his life.
Well, listen, how many tens of thousands of people are dying in America of opioids every year?
Every day.
That may not be the same as trying to achieve a high. It's trying to avoid a low and then getting so low you never return. But crack was a thing, and it affected all of society, and it shouldn't surprise us that some fighters were affected by it as well.
Speaking of this opioid thing, I mean, the fact that you can get, that you were able to get these pills, I mean, they were willing to give them to me left and right. I never took a one in my life. I never took a one, but they gave me a couple of pain pills one time for my dentistry and for my back and this and that. And that's what they tell me. Just take this. Just take this. Godfather, man, these are doctors pushing stuff on you, so you get the assumption that it's good. You know what I'm saying? And then you find out after a week you're hooked.
Well, you know, I've read many stories about this phenomenon, and it's sad. It's happened to a lot of average people who have lost their jobs in the changing job market of modern times and have no place to go and are depressed because of how it can break up families. And they look to avoid the pain that they're experiencing. I don't know that the government has done enough to limit that, but obviously there are other solutions that that prevail. But let's say you lived in a town in Ohio, yeah, and it's had manufacturing there for generations, and your family and friends are all there, and suddenly,
yeah, but
jobs are gone.
But Godfather, that shouldn't turn you into a heroin addict. Anyway, say hello to the God Mama for me. It is January 12, 2020. I love you, and we'll talk real soon.
Keep the faith, Pedro.
The Hall of Famer, the one, the only, the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather Larry Merchant in the house. Thank you so much, Godfather. This is Ring Talk, live worldwide. Together, talk, strike, and they party.